Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to this episode of Unfair and Unbalanced, a podcast with Roy Snell and Tom Fox. We are on location today in Houston, Texas, for the Utilities and Energy Conference, the SCCE Utilities and Energy Conference. And I was able to get Roy to sit down and take some time from his schedule to record this podcast. So, Roy, thanks for taking the time to visit with me.
I always love doing these.
Roy, there was a topic that came up last month in the Harvard Business Review around hotlines. There was some commentary back and forth around hotlines. And I heard you talk about a really interesting way to publicize the hotline, so it kind of led me to want to explore hotlines with you. So why don't you throw out your idea,
sure.
Because I found it just fascinating.
So, I stole this idea from somebody. I just don't know if they necessarily want me to give them credit for them, but they know who they are, and thank you. Someone suggested or said they either did or suggested the idea of having a CEO do a video supporting the concept of the hotline, telling people what the phone number, looking them in the eye or in the camera, and saying, we need you to call. We want you to call. And if I remember the story correctly, they said they got a couple calls right away. And they really appreciated it coming from the CEO. And that the CEO was somewhat respected and charismatic and help, but it just seemed to me to be a genius concept. Some people complain that they can't get people to get folks to use the hotline, which I think we want to talk a little bit more about fear of retaliation. They're never going to do anything. And so you got to work at it. You can't just throw up a phone number on a postcard or a poster and expect people to do it. You got to work the room a bit. And before I forget, I got to share you with an idea. As you and I were just chatting a moment ago before we pushed the button here to record, I thought of an idea that I have never thought of in the 20 years I've been doing this stuff. And I always get a kick out of those because you think that would have come up sooner. But why is it that we don't have, if we have such a problem with trust of the hotline, and we have such a problem getting department managers engaged and involved in spreading compliance, why don't we tell managers, supervisors, every supervisor to oh boy, the general counsel might not like this idea, so maybe you could do a counterplay to this, but why don't we have managers all over the building, C-suite, board members, anybody, tell them you gotta ask somebody, somewhere, a couple of times a month, have you seen anything going on around here that you don't think is right? Why is it we don't have everybody? Because I used to do that. I would walk the halls. I once got asked to do a presentation about compliance as a verb, and I told the person who asked me to do it, I had no clue what they were talking about, and they said, well, it was because you walk around. You do, it's like management by walking around is a theory or something, but yes, I did that. I hated my office. I didn't want to be in my office. I didn't want to be in meetings. I wanted to be out talking to the people. And I found some real gems along the way of problems from people you would never have guessed. But I just stopped them in the hallway. And I said, have you ever seen anything around here that you think should have been cleaned up and wasn't? Why isn't everybody doing that? Why isn't every manager doing that? Why isn't it a part of their job description? Do you think legal counsel would blow a gasket if a compliance officer suggested this?
I don't think they would blow a gasket, but maybe I would like to take that and run with it in a different direction because
sure.
Last month there was a Harvard Business Review article about hotlines, and the point I got from the article was that hotlines are one communication tool.
Yeah.
And if they sit there, if it sits there alone with no other communication tool used, it is not effective. And they went so far as to say it's much more effective if you as the compliance officer are out there meeting people, if you're doing town meetings, if you're walking the halls, if you're going to remote locations. It's not just about training. It's not just about even putting a name to a face. It's about a up and down or a bi-dimensional communication, and that the hotline is an effective tool for communication. But don't think of it even as a unidimensional continuum or a one-way, because if someone calls into the hotline and they don't get a response or there's no follow-up, or there's no transparency about the information that they presented and the steps you have taken back to them, it's not an effective tool.
Right. Yeah, I was just making some notes while you're talking. Anybody who knows the organization I work for knows we do a lot of marketing. And I'm stunned that I don't get beat up more for the marketing we do. I'm glad people at least let it go, if not understand. It is helping the profession grow. It's helping us grow. It's helping the profession grow. We got to do it. But it's partly because I think if we're going to do anything, do it big. If you're going to want to grow, you got to grow. If you want problems reported, you got to go big. And a lot of times, and you know, we're all busy, so I can see it happening, but you don't just slap a phone number up on a poster, right? And that's kind of what the article sounds like they were talking about, is go beyond this. You need a phone number and a culture that trusts the number. You got to do some education. You get leadership to talk about it. Maybe you do my idea that I suggested a minute ago of asking more managers to stop people in the hallway. Here's another one I thought of while you were asking the question. We got to train managers. If somebody reports a problem to you, not in your area, that is involves another department, you have to run, not walk, to the compliance officer. Think about it. I'll bet a whole bunch of times a year a problem is rumored or reported to one supervisor about another department, and they go, not my problem.
Right.
So those people have to be told, if we find out that you were aware or warned or told of this problem months or years before the problem was finally found, and you didn't report it, you're in part of management. You're supposed to care, and we care. So a phone number, a Dropbox, maybe something on a website. This is my marketing idea. You know, people tell me, we market on a lot of different things. We do paper, we do emails, we do ads, on websites, we every conceivable way you can get the word out, we get the word out. If you want a successful hotline, more importantly, if you think your hotline is not successful, it should be a grave concern to you. Don't do one idea, do 10 ideas. Don't sit in here. I see people make lists all the time. So, well, we got a problem, how are we going to solve it? And the people aren't using the hotline enough. And you say, well, here's 10 ideas. And some bonehead is going to say, what are the top two best ones? I don't want the top two best ones. I want them all. If there is a class of people who say, I'd rather slip a paper into a Dropbox at night when I'm walking by, or I'd rather go online and anonymously shoot something somehow, I don't know how they do this, if it'll even work, or I want to call the number, I want to tell my supervisor, oh my gosh, don't forget, always tell everybody, start with your supervisor. Do them all. So what if one of these methodologies only gets two ideas a year, two calls a year, two pieces of paper a year? It's if you want it done right, if you want to do this stuff, don't just throw one answer at it and run along. You've got to work at it.
If it's not a true story, it's an apocryphal story. And it's even if it's an apocryphal story, it has to be repeated. And it's the story of the company who is in front of the Department of Justice, as you said, with the two tables together, and except they're at the final stage and they're about to agree on whatever the resolution of their FCPA issue was. And the Department of Justice lawyer says, excuse me, I've got to step out, goes to her office and rings the hotline and gets, this line is no longer working.
Oh dear.
So if you're in front of the Department of Justice, make sure your hotline works. And make sure it works from countries outside of the United States.
Yeah.
A lot goes back and forth around hotlines about metrics. It's all about, we got X number of calls, and we got X percent of those calls resolved within X number of days. It's about measurable things, and it seems to me when you talk like that, you lose the quality. You lose the qualitative part by focusing on the quantitative. And that's really the biggest part of the Harvard Business Review article is communication is a quality. It is a number, yes, and I understand you need to know your numbers. But if you don't take the quality aspect of it, in all its forms, in the form of the person sending it to you, and you in the form of receiving it, and you communicating back in a businesslike and professional manner, and you in keeping the person informed of a resolution, you lose that ability to have that robust communication, and you lose the ability to get new ideas.
Yeah, I want to. I'm glad you said the word ideas, because this is going to sound like I had it, used it as a segue, as opposed to just changing the subject. I just wrote an article, Use Ideas, Not Excuses.
Right.
And it kind of applies to this and anything related to it. If you have a problem, if you believe, you're told in a meeting by important people that nobody trusts your outlook, there's two sets of reactions, ideas and explanations, or ideas and excuses. I would always watch yourself. If you get criticism, if you fail, if you screw up, if you have a problem, or anybody on your team has any of this going on, watch for the explanations. Those are dangerous. They're bad. I don't like them. Explanations prevent the discussion of ideas. They give people the idea that here's the explanation of why we failed, so therefore it's not our fault, or there's nothing we can do about it. It gives people the impression that there's no way to fix this issue of in this case, ineffective hotlines. If you can get people to, if someone is in a room and they're saying, I just don't feel good about our anonymous reporting mechanism, so let's talk about ideas. And not talk about the best one and do that one. Let's talk about 10 of them, do them all. And includes, by the way, building an environment where people trust it. Education should come along with all this, building trust and that sort of thing. By the way, you talked about something else I just want to comment on, Tom, is I get beat up every once in a while by people who work for me because they say, you don't trust me. And by the way, I think we have 5% turnover a year for the last probably 6 years now. We don't lose a lot of people, but I'm real sensitive to criticism. And when people say, when you raise that question, Roy, you make it look like you don't trust me. And I'm sorry that's a negative side effect, but I encourage people, I'm sorry, don't trust. Don't trust the hotline. Don't trust. Like what made me think of it was, if I found out that the hotline was shut down at some point along the way by some bonehead, I would implement a control to say to somebody, your job is to call the hotline once a week. It's not good just test to see if it's still running. Does the person answer the phone on the first ring? Do they, you know, have somebody who speaks a different language call it up? Doubt, 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 doubt.
How about trust but verify?
I like it, thank you. See, I always get beat up. I love it, though. That's why I love, we had a little, I did a presentation today and encouraged a small group of people to beat me up. And the best education isn't the guy up front speaking. It's the guy in the audience clarifying, correcting, maybe disagreeing. And so a more positive way is trust but verify, is just check and tell them why you're checking. I got to check. That's not you. I don't dislike you. I don't distrust you. I have to verify. Good word.
It's very Reagan-esque.
Yeah. It's another great point. The best complaint, and where I heard first the word trust but verify is a guy named Dan Roach, good friend of mine, and one of the finest.
One of the founders of our profession.
He is, absolutely, and he's also just a stunningly creative individual, and all those skills that are most important for a compliance officer, audit, negotiation, collaboration, compromise, motivation, getting along, building trust, building bridges, not looking like a cop, and he will think of ways to word things that I would word more passionately and in a panic and emphatically that would offend someone. Dan, on the other hand, gets to where we need to go, but has everybody smiling.
Let me pick up on a point I heard you make earlier today, which really does tie into this discussion of hotlines. And you talked about spider webs and how one of the visuals around compliance is to create spider webs where everyone is connected and intertwined. And I'd like to use that to really explore this idea back to the Harvard Business Review article that Hotline is one tool, but it's only one tool.
Correct.
In communication. And you can walk around the office, walk the halls to communicate, but there are other ways that a compliance officer can communicate. What are some of the things that you've seen or you've done or you might even suggest?
Well, I would be remiss, by the way, to not mention that I made the acquaintance of some folks in the communication profession. And they worked in the communication department in a very large company that was doing their very best to implement compliance and ethics programs. And their comm department got really engaged. It kind of spun it a little bit as, I want the world, I want buyers, I want partners, I certainly want the enforcement community to think we care. And so it was kind of a PR spin or a, I don't care why you're doing stuff. If you're helping push the rock, do it well. Use whatever motivation you want. But I certainly would engage the comm department. Maybe PR. You got to be a little careful because PR doesn't want to spread bad news. And every once in a while, you got to spread bad news. And there are going to be some folks who go, I'm sorry. The way you cleaned up my paragraph, the truth is gone. Or the problem that we have to disclose is gone. You know, so.
Well, you know, spin sucks, and spin sucks. But for PR, that may be where your social media, 22-year-old social media guru is embedded.
How could we not mention, and both of us are, for old guys, really active in social media, you should be working, whether it's the comm department or somebody in your department, you got to be careful. There's some stuff you may not want to educate through social media. Bring people along, make sure the legal department is comfortable and all these sorts of things, but, you know, educate people through, anyway. And again, I just tell you, the fundamental principles are where it's at. The answer to these questions are almost the same for me a lot. Go find, if you want to communicate, go find 14 ways to communicate and do them all, not the best two. Do them all a little bit. You can't afford to do them all a little bit. I just can't stand it when people think of 14 ideas and then they all break their necks trying to figure out the best two. You know, and the problem is we're all trying to market to people and communicate to people just like us because we think everybody should be just like us. Well, everybody's not like us. There are people working in the back plant of some far-flung place in the company that would rather hear things from Twitter or would rather report an issue to a website, which most of us be uncomfortable with. Just have it there, you know, use all the avenues. I'm not sure I headed down the road you were asking me to, but I just think, talk about a great department that we could go get some time out of.
Right.
Yeah. If people want me to complain about budgets, you go check my writing. I have not complained about the adequacy of compliance budgets that I can recall in 20 years. And people kind of want me to weigh in and say, oh, there's not enough money, and leadership and CEOs don't give them enough money. And I say, look, CEOs give you all the money they can. Everybody is in their office every week telling them, I need more money. They're gonna disappoint somebody, or they're gonna disappoint everybody a little bit. Forget the budget. My advice would be take all you can get. Go ask for all you can have. But as soon as that's done, go visit four departments and ask them to do your work.
Right.
And besides the spiderweb thing, you know, if you not only could you go get the comm department to getting excited and engaged to talk about and promote the company's efforts and ethics to make the company look good, say to the comm guys, hey, you know, those PR folks over there, you think they want to tell the world that we're all pretty good people. Why don't you go talk to them? Now, you're not asking PR. You're not even taking the time to get the PR department to do your work. You're getting the comm department to get the PR department to do their work. Or you go to the department leaders and tell them all that they should try and find problems. Like, go down the hall and ask somebody if they've seen any problem. By the way, maybe you should ask your supervisors to go do this. get the spider web. I like the methodology. I heard it today for the first time, to be honest with you. But I like the spider web thing. Compliance and ethics, it has to be everywhere all the time for it to really, really work. And I don't think we spend enough time getting other people to do our work, or AKA, the nice way to say it is get everybody engaged. Compliance officer is not responsible for compliance in the organization.
Let me just,
the employees are.
Well, let me just say something that might cheer your heart a little bit along those lines, because the remarks from the Department of Justice's new compliance counsel, Wei Chen, last November, about what she was going to look for and to determine if a company had an effective compliance program in place at the time of an incident, revolved around the operationalization of compliance in the company. But it was beyond burning it into the DNA of the company. It was, were those stakeholders talking to compliance, and were they talking to each other?
Yeah.
And she wanted evidence of that, whether it be anecdotal, whether it be measurable, quantitative documents, and it really seemed to me that she and the department have come to a very much higher level of understanding about their thinking has evolved, and their understanding has evolved as the profession has evolved, and they now want to see that really operationalization of compliance into the business.
Yeah. I have read parts of an interview and listened to a video of her and Andrew Weissman.
Yes.
And it's very interesting to hear where her interests lie. I actually got a chance to meet her with Adam Turtletaub when I were in D.C. a couple weeks ago, and we had just 20 minutes. But I really think that she is going to be looking at exactly what you're talking about. A lot of her questions or interests lie in the area of, is it burned in? Is leadership supportive? These sorts of things. I might be able to scoop you on something, Tom, which would be really a first, because you're so close to all this. But since we saw each other this morning at this presentation and this afternoon doing this recording, I saw an announcement. Andrew Weissman, Wei Chen's boss, said somewhere that they're going to come out with a list of questions that they're going to distribute. And by the way, I hate scooping, because part is I only saw it once, I only saw it one place. I haven't verified it yet, and I'm not sure I read it right, and I frequently read too fast. But I think they're going to send out a list of questions that they're going to ask to try and get at whether or not the organization has a commitment or to compliance or effective compliance program. And if I read that right, that list would be very fascinating, because don't make it a checklist. But you better check the list.
Absolutely.
It'll be very interesting to see where she comes from on all this. And I'd pay attention to her. We just got to be a little careful. She and the DOJ are going to have a methodology, and it's going to be coming from a certain perspective. And Dan Roach, one of the most respected compliance guys out there, is going to come at it from a different angle. Tom Fox, Roy Schnell, organizations like the SEC, books are written on it. We have to be careful to make sure that we get everybody's perspective and not just say one way is the right way, which, by the way, Andrew Weissman is really sharp, and he is very quick to say, we understand there is no single way to get this done.
And here I was about to scoop you with the announcement of the new book, Snell on Compliance, the definitive text coming out. So, Roy,
you have scooped me.
Roy, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time, so we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you, Tom.